Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jason Lewis, and you're listening to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Before I introduce today's guest, I do want to thank our sponsor, QBAC. QBAC is a next-generation advancement solution that reimagines alumni engagement to drive giving. QBAC's proactive, personalized approach to engagement helps you build your major gift pipeline even in a time of social distancing. QBAC's AI-driven system uncovers actionable insights about alumni interest and connections and automatically delivers them to advancement professionals for use in cultivation. QBAC is a force multiplier for development officers, enabling them to focus on what they do best, developing deep relationships with individuals and converting them into active donors. Learn how to raise more money with less by going to www.qbac.com to schedule a free demo. I would also like to tell you about Responsive Fundraising's training. If you are looking to align your team around a shared understanding of effective fundraising, let's talk about our four frameworks. If your culture doesn't feel right, before you begin any significant planning, launch a capital campaign, hire another member of your team, let's ensure everyone is on the same page. How about inviting us to be on site with your board, leadership team, volunteers, and staff for your next planning event? If you'd prefer a virtual seminar, we can do that too. Let's get your team thinking more critically and carefully about the road ahead. Shoot me an email. I'll also put some information in the show notes. Good morning, guys. I am delighted to have Richard and Jeff from the Veritas Group on with me today for this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Richard and Jeff, you and I have been talking for quite some time. We've developed a friendship. Jeff, you and I have been at conferences together, but in 200 episodes, we have not had you on the Fundraising Talent Podcast. So I'm delighted to have you with me here this morning to talk about your new book. Before we dive in and unpack what I got to admit is probably the first actual fundraising book that I've read in probably 5 years. Before we dive into that, let's just ask you to introduce yourself. Richard, why don't you start? Tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about the firm that that I believe you founded.
Yeah, thank you, Jason. I'm the founding partner of Veritas Group. And actually, Veritas came out of another a company that another gentleman and I owned and operated in the 90s, a direct marketing firm called the Domain Group. And we sold that that agency in 2005. And then I kept going with Major Gift work, which is now expanded into mid-level and plan giving. And Jeff and I worked together at that other company. And so we just got together in 2009 and kind of kept this thing going. But I've been doing fundraising for both as a in the trench development director, major gift person, as well as a consultant for over 40 years. Yep.
That's pretty impressive. That's pretty impressive, Jeff. Introduce yourself, please.
Yeah. Jeff Schreifels, and I'm senior partner at Veritas. And not quite as long as Richard, but over 32 years in fundraising. Right out of college, working for a small nonprofit, kind of just, you know, I needed a job, and I just called this small nonprofit up and said, "Hey, do you have any jobs available?" And they said, "Well, do you know how to fundraise?" And I said, "No, but I'll learn." And they said, "Good enough, we'll hire you." So from there on, right out of college, started doing fundraising. And I just fell in love with it, and as Richard said, you know, I worked 8 years as a development director for two nonprofits, very small. So I had to do a little bit of everything. But then came to work with Richard in Seattle with Domain Group back in 96 and did that for many, many years. And then Richard and I came together, as he said, in 2009 to work specifically with nonprofits on the upper end of the major gift pyramid, you know, mid-level major gifts and plan giving. And so we've been doing that now for, gosh, almost 11 years and worked with hundreds of organizations, work with thousands of major gift officers over that time period. And we're having a ball. We love it.
Yeah. Before we dive into this book, guys, so Richard, tell me about this. So I've had a number of the folks who have come through your program on my podcast. Brian Baxter was the last guy. I know he came through the through your academy.
Yeah.
What is it about your people that come through your program that sort of set you all apart? Because there's something about the major gift officers that I've talked to here on the podcast that have come through your program. And I could probably think of a couple other sort of niche corners that they come from. But there is something different. What is that, Richard?
Well, I think it's Jason, it's kind of based in a philosophy that is grounded by data. We are very data driven people. And then the other thing, which I know we're going to talk about, secondly, is the philosophy of what fundraising is, which is what our first book was about. You know, we wrote about that fundraising is really not about money at all. That money is a result, not an objective. So you combine data and that philosophy, and it creates a different kind of dynamic and different kind of approach to major gift fundraising than people have done in the past. The thought leaders in the past were basically about how do we get the donor to give?
Yeah.
Now we do that. We do that as well, but it's sort of secondary because it's a result and not an objective. Although we are looking to raise funds, so it's, I don't know, that's a fairly complex answer, but that's how it works for us.
But I would say, Jason, that's the kind of people that are attracted to us and Veritas, is that they've grown discomfort about how they've been doing the fundraising in the mm-hmm. past. And so they see Veritas, you guys sound different. Like you're talking about building relationships. You're not talking about just going after money. And that just feels right to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so they check us out and then they realize, wow, as Richard said, not only is this all about building a relationship with the donor and being real and authentic with them, but you actually have a disciplined structure to what you do and how you do it so that we actually have the time to build those relationships.
Yeah, I have to. Brian was on here, I want to say probably about 10 episodes back. And I know he's one of your most recent, you call him graduates. And I have to say, sincerity would probably be the first word. And you guys probably didn't give him that. He probably came with that. That's probably mm-hmm. a characteristic that we all come to wherever we land. But I appreciated the intentionality that apparently he picked up on. With your program. So we're going to dive into this book. Like I said, this is probably, most of my listeners have probably gathered, and anybody who's read my own stuff knows that I'm not much of a fan of a lot of the fundraising stuff out there. I like to dive into a more interdisciplinary fundraising books are not really what I get into. But Jeff, you sent me a copy of you all's next new book. It's not just about the donor, the ultimate management guide to major gift success. And I really just want to, if you don't mind, we're just going to dive into some key points in here. Richard, I think the first thing that I really resonated with me right from the beginning, I thought it was quite bold, is this idea that major gifts is a spiritual endeavor. I really appreciated that. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, well, we're quick to point out that when we use the word spiritual, it's not a religious term. So it's a small s, not a capital S.
Yes, yes.
So, but in terms of who we are, if you're a person of faith, then you can add that in there. That's fine. And if you're not, that's fine as well. But basically what we're saying is that a human being has these passions and interests and leanings and they have a very good idea of what matters to them as it relates to the planet. And And in many cases, it's a very deeply held belief and feeling and a spiritual thing. It's about the inner self and doing good. And so what we have approached this whole thing is basically saying, look, we've got to uncover those passions and interests and help that donor fulfill them and express them. And as we're doing that, the result will be the money. We have seen tremendous results as a result of that approach. I mean, it changes the whole thing from a transaction to a relationship-based thing. So that's how we come to the word or the concept that it's a spiritual concept.
I think to add to what Richard said is, if you think about it, you know, a donor, get these resources? They got it through their hard labor,
mm-hmm.
right? And so from their hard labor, they're making a decision to part with it, to give it up, to get something even greater. And that is to feel joy in their life, fulfillment through their giving. And so if you're a major gift fundraiser, you're that person, you're that bridge between that donor who wants to change the world out of their labor, their hard work, and wants to give it away, and that need in the world. And you're bringing that together every day. And that at that point of intersection, we think something mystical happens.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the spiritual aspect of major gift fundraising. It is bringing the donor and their desire to change the world and the need in the need and trying to alleviate that need.
Yeah, I'd like to add one more thing about the labor. So that was good, Jeff, because I had jumped over that one. We had, as a human being, I had unlimited amount of time, what would I be doing? I'd be using my labor, my skills, my abilities to not only generate revenue for myself so I can survive, but also by going and doing good with my labor. So the whole concept of labor and earning money is that you earn money because you've expended labor. And then you use that money to transfer your labor over into doing good. So that check, that's why we look at a check from a donor or money that comes from a donor as a very precious and sacred thing, because it represents the essence of that donor that's coming over to us to do good, as if they were themselves present doing it themselves. That's why it is so special to us.
Yeah. whether we're referring to spirituality with a big S or a little S, I remember I was working with a client in Austin, Texas. This was 5 or 6 years ago, and I did a feasibility study for them. And this was a private school, sort of up and coming private school in the Austin area. And they had me interview, you know, 35, 40 sort of parent and grandparent couples. And, say about every other interviewee that I interviewed was very deliberate about this idea that the school's identity was sort of rooted in being a secular school. They didn't mm-hmm. want any sort of spiritual affiliation. And I remember afterwards in my report, one of the first points I made is I said, generosity is oftentimes rooted in tradition. It's oftentimes something that we find in our faith, whatever that faith happens to be. Mm-hmm. And I said, you guys are so deliberately secular that half your people sort of don't have this. You sort of interestingly sort of formed this community because these people were really struggling with fundraising.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you form this community that generosity is not just, it's just not this sort of this predominant sort of value that's held universally amongst your people. And yet most organizations, whoever they happen to be, affiliated with the church or otherwise, are generally tapping into some sort of spiritual component of their donors' lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Jeff, so you, I'm sure you can give me some. This is one of those first. There's always a point in these books where we run into things like, yes, I'm glad somebody else has said this. Jeff, the second myth, and I think you guys, one of you even alluded to the idea that it irks you is probably as much as it irks me when you hear it. But this idea that our donors are different.
Yeah.
I can't count the number of times, as I'm sure that between the two of you, you can probably count many more times. I've had an organization say to me, oh, but our donors are different. Mm-hmm. And I want to say, no, they're not.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on that, Jeff?
Well, I mean, and Richard can talk about mm-hmm. this too, but we have worked with just about every type of organization in the U.S.
Every sector.
Yep. Every sector, mm-hmm. you know, arts, universities, domestic,
social
food services. Banks, everything. And every time we've had a presentation with the organization or we just start talking with them, it seems like every one of their executive directors or development director will say something like, well, you know, you got those results for that organization, but our donors are way different than that. mm-hmm. And we let them go on, and then we say, hold on. Basically, no, your donors aren't different. And we can prove that to you by looking at all these different organizations that we worked with. But basically, donors want to give. And you need to build a relationship with them. And if you do that and you have a compelling offer and you build that relationship, you serve that donor well, they're going to respond. And there might be little nuances and things with different organizations. But the fact is that we've seen it across the board. Donors really are not that different at all. And not only just in the US, but right. in Canada, Central America, UK, Southeast Asia. Richard's been all over the world. He's experienced the same thing. Donors still react very similarly.
Yeah, and on that international thing, it's very interesting because the somebody will say, well, it's a different culture here. Well, of course it is. But there's still the whole aspect of generosity and wanting to do good. That's a human thing. So whether you're in Jakarta or Hong Kong or Sydney or Santiago, Chile or Sao Paulo, Brazil, doesn't matter. It all is the same thing. So it's so interesting to us that these folks like we had one organization where they were talking about how, well, our donors here in New York City, I mean, they're absolutely different. I mean, New York's a different place, Richard. I mean, you realize that, right? And
yeah.
It's so funny and irritating.
No, I know. I just had that recently come up because we're working with an organization in New York City and they're like, well, we're not going to be able to expect, you know, the same kind of results because, you know, our donors really love just going to galas. They don't want you to talk to them about a gift, you know, a gift personally one-on-one. And I said, mm-hmm. wait, are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
And then, well, what about this? What about that? Oh, okay. And, you know, once we get involved, Jason, with them, you know, obviously we start building the relationship. Great things happen. Then they're like, oh, wow. I think people like to use it as a crutch, you know, so that they don't have to actually relate to a donor. That's basically what I think it is.
But is it an excuse? Do you find it to be I've only had one cup of coffee, but I'd have to sit here and sort of analyze where I think it comes up the most. But it usually comes up inadvertently as some sort of resistance to change. Mm-hmm. And yet oftentimes I'm sure guys like you, the two of you and certainly myself are trying to get them to provide usually a more personalized, more customized, yeah. more high context sort of way of engaging with their donors. And yet to suggest, and we're probably trying to resist sort of this sort of this monoculture that oftentimes organizations are guilty of creating for their donors. And yet to suggest that their donors are different is in some way sort of making the case for us. Am I right?
Yeah. It's an excuse not to go out and actually create relationships with donors. And, you know, we run into a lot of different excuses, like our donors don't like face-to-face, or our donors only like face-to-face, or there's always an excuse. Mm-hmm. And the bottom line is there's really a fear of actually sitting down with a donor and asking them for a transformational gift. That's usually what it is. There's a fear of asking.
Yeah. Richard, there's usually a place in these books. And like I said, I don't read a lot of fundraising books. I think I gave up on them about 10 years in, but they were just too, there was too many, how-to books out there and too many sort of, you know, plug and play, you know, one best way to raise money. But Richard, I have to say that the gold nugget, which I'm always looking for, is only about 45 pages in. And I don't even think I've written this down. This is certainly going to be, I think this is perhaps what I'm going to be quoting you all in my next book. This idea that campaigns hurt major gifts and that campaigns are in fact short term. I don't think, Richard, I've ever heard, and I've thought the same thing. I have oftentimes thought, how do we get, because I think in fundraising, we naturally sort of see this very linear process that goes from new donor acquisition to some sort of mid-donor program to major gifts and then capital campaigns. And I'm thinking, no, that's totally the wrong way. All you're doing, and you even say it, Richard, you guys talk about this idea that you sort of lapse, or return to a lot of those metrics in that very even though you're getting these perhaps much more extraordinary gifts by comparison, you're still back to the very transactional sort of nature of what fundraising oftentimes looks like at the very beginning. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, well, this whole topic, I mean, a lot of nonprofit leaders, you know, have invested a lot of time in campaigns. And then when we come along and say that it hurts major gifts, it's a tough pill to swallow. It really is. But and we've been saying it like over and over again. I mean, the whole thing is major donors is about a major gift thing. You know, it's about donors, getting them, keeping them, loving them, caring for them and all that stuff. And campaigns are short term. I remember if I mentioned this organization, everybody listening would know, but there was a huge gift that came in to do certain things in major metropolitan areas around the country. And so campaigns were launched in each of these metropolitan areas. And what happened is they siphoned off from major donors in each of those metropolitan areas for the one-time kind of campaign, short-term thing. And the result was, well, they made some progress in that area in terms of getting that program launched, but then operating it was a whole different story. They'd expended the whole, they hadn't retained the donors to continue into the future along the lines that they were interested in. So it's so transactional, a campaign.
Yeah.
You're part of a donor pyramid. Right. You're filling the spot on a gift pyramid. I mean, a gift pyramid.
Yeah.
And it's all done to reach a goal, and it moves the donor off the cause. I mean, somebody might argue that point, but it moves them off the cause and it moves away from outcomes and lives changed to, well, let's get this goal. And it's very subtle. So that's why it hurts.
Yeah.
The major gift program and retention suffers, donor retention.
And we've seen this, Jason. And we can talk about this because we work with a lot of them, but a lot of the public media stations that we've worked with in their past, they have little to barely any kind of a major gift program, but they put on a campaign every 4 years or so to try to boost their giving. And they do this big campaign. They get everyone in, you know, and mainly it's the board giving a bunch of money and then a few other major donors. They get them all excited. And then they forget about them. And they don't do anything with those donors until another 4 years later. And these donors are like, well, so I'm just here to for these campaigns, I see. And I'm, you know, that's just it. You just want me for my money. That's it.
Yeah.
And we see it over and over, like, well, we got to boost major gifts. Let's do a campaign. And we're saying, no, let's start building relationships and getting to know these donors. What are your donors' passion and interests? Maybe they don't care about what you're campaigning for. But we're like trying to force them, like Richard said, showing them a pyramid. Where do you fit on this thing? Are you a $100,000 one or are you a 10th? You know what I mean? Like pick where you should go.
Well, I mean, they launched a campaign. Like there's one organization out west, a $20 million campaign. Going after that, while you look at the donors attached to that organization, and those donors are, we're losing $140, $148 million over a 2-year period. But boy, we got the campaign going.
Right.
So we got the 20, but we lost 100. I mean, it actually economically doesn't make sense. It relationally doesn't make sense. Someone might say, well, then how do you do a campaign? Well, fold it into the ongoing operations and plans of the organization and make it about that. It's a subtle thing, but make it about the cause and the long term. And I know you're going to get probably some comments, Jason, on this and pushback, but that'll be fun for you.
Oh, I Richard, you and I don't know each other. Jeff and I have done a little bit of work together. I'm all about getting the pushback. I love this quote you guys got in here. We've never been impressed with how many millions or multiple millions or zillions a campaign raises. What impresses us is donor value retention over the long term. That's exactly the real work. I've got to say, I have said that so many different times. Mm-hmm. To clients and to others. And I oftentimes describe it as sort of this roller coaster culture that these campaigns create, because and oftentimes it's our colleagues in the consulting space that sort of sell this thing, this idea that to raise extraordinary dollars, you've got to put together all this pomp and circumstance and, you know, hoopla around a capital campaign. And I've said to, I think it was, I do come from the sort of the faith-based space, and I think I picked up on this in the first couple of years of my career. Moody, I think in Chicago, is raising like $40 million in scholarship dollars every year for their students. I'm like, why do you need to necessarily have a capital campaign to raise extraordinary dollars?
Exactly.
I just don't think, I mean, I've got clients out there that have, it's like pulling teeth to convince them that you can raise, you know, a couple million bucks without having to put on all this on a big show.
Well, you have an infrastructure of development that propagates it. So it's just like constantly, you know, you've got from the board who's saying, well, we got to have a capital campaign if we're going to do this. And so it's enculturated into the nonprofit that the only way to raise big gifts is to create some kind of flashy campaign to entice a donor to do it.
Yeah.
Instead of the hard work of building that relationship and gaining their trust and really understanding what they love about your organization.
You know, what's funny about these campaigns is a campaign is actually like, it's a bigger expression of an event.
Yeah.
Which is why we're down on events too, for the same reason. Let's do this event. It's a one-time transactional thing. Or let's do this campaign, and it's a one-time transactional thing. And they both need to be modified to be integrated into the long-term relationship with the donor.
Oh, Richard, see, that's so insightful. I mean, you guys have just officially made it into my next book because I'm working on this. So my chapter about capital campaigns, I'm trying to sort of completely dismantle this notion of even capital campaigns being sort of in the lexicon of really talented fundraisers, this idea of, I think the contrast to what we're talking about is this notion of cathedral thinking. And cathedral thinking that's out there is this idea that that anything of the extraordinary sort of magnitude that would warrant the type of thinking that we're talking about when we talk about a quote-unquote capital campaign ought to extend beyond anything that any one person's tenure or any board member's tenure or any one individual donor can contribute to. And I just don't think that, I mean, that's truly long-term. Cathedral thinking is truly long-term thinking. And so when I saw you guys, I don't know that I've ever seen anyone put the word capital campaign and short-term thinking sort of side by side. I think that was quite bold. Jeff, one of the things that I thought was really impressive, I bet you guys have the first fundraising book out there now that has been able to grab hold of COVID-19 and the recent pandemic. What sort of opportunity do you think that, as you guys were sort of pulling this together, because I'm sure you guys worked on this for, if you're like me, you work on one of these things for 12 to 18 months,
yeah,
if not longer. So what sort of opportunities or challenges did COVID sort of create for you? Because you guys incorporated into, I think I found there were numerous places where I was like, wow, these guys, they got COVID in here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah, you're right. You know, we've been working on this for a while, but when COVID hit, Richard and I realized we've got to address that in the book. So, and you know, I think one of the things that played well for us is that Richard and I have always been talking about, metrics and the craziness that the traditional fundraising world, especially like universities, are so focused on fundraising metrics. And they're big on these face-to-face metrics. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like you got to have 25 face-to-face every month or 30. So for example, I was at the University of Michigan. And I had breakfast with four major gift officers. And I said, tell me one of your pain points. And they said, I got to tell you. And everyone said this, we've got to meet this metric. We got to meet 25 times. And they said, basically, to be honest with you, at the end of the week, we're scrambling just to find a meeting with anyone so that we can check this off. Because if we don't, we'll get docked and it'll look bad for us. And Richard and I have heard this over and over. Major gift fundraisers are constantly emailing us. What do you think about this? Is this metric, this doesn't make sense to me. Why do I have to have 40 phone calls a month, you know, and just to check it off? And so Richard and I were like, this is ridiculous. What it's really important is meaningful connections. Mm-hmm. Meaning, are you moving the relationship forward? Whether it's email, Zoom, phone call, text, are you deepening the relationship or are you moving it towards a solicitation? And that's more meaningful than did you just meet a metric? And so when COVID hit, this was an opportunity because now major gift officers could no longer meet face-to-face with donors. And so we were saying, it's okay. You can have a meaningful connection through email, through phone calls, and they started phoning donors. They started having Zoom calls immediately.
Text.
With donors. Text.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they were having these incredible discussions, Jason. It was almost like donors now were able to connect with them in like no other way possible before. Like donors, well, they were at home, right? And they were answering their phones. They were going okay to Zoom. And they were having much deeper conversations with donors than ever because we're all kind of going through this whole thing together collectively. And so there was a pain point that everyone shared. But that was the big point. And that's something we immediately started talking to our clients and then to, you know, the folks that read our blogs and all of that, hey, this is the time to make those meaningful connections and gain the trust of your donor. And we saw donors who would, you know, MGOs were reporting back to us saying, gosh, I hadn't been able to get a hold of this donor for so long. And they told me I could email them. And then they said, let's get on a Zoom call. Mm-hmm. And so that was the biggest thing is that it really helped reinforce to the major gift officers that it's not about how you do it. It's what is the donor? How does the donor want you to connect with them?
There was one other thing in there too, Jason, that that played into this whole thing. So when I was managing the domain group, which was the direct marketing firm, we had a bricks and mortar kind of setup. We had offices in Seattle, which was our headquarters, and then outside of Denver, Atlanta, London, and Paris. Buildings, offices, legal, finance, all this other stuff. When we sold that company in 2005, I said to myself, you know what? We don't need to do it this way. And so in 2005, I basically went virtual. And so Veritas Group is a virtual company. We have no office, no central office. And we're legally organized in one state, but I mean, it's like, they're independent. We're all independent contractors. We live all around the country and it runs just fine. So we had ourselves become familiar with how to do the remote thing. And so it's not only what Jeff mentioned, which is the main point, meaningful connections, focus on that, but it's also this secondary point of you can operate remotely. And so we applied all of those principles and learnings and knowledge to fundraising, and which is why you see it in the book.
I think to sort of sum it up, guys, I'm sort of having the pleasure. I usually do these things sort of shoot from the hip. I'm a shoot from the hip sort of guy. I think the prediction that I'm making about 2021, and I'm trying to make several of them. I'm gonna put this out on LinkedIn or something. But I think the sort of the takeaway from this conversation, and certainly what I think that your book, and for our listeners, it's not just about the donor, the ultimate management guide to major gift success. I think it's that context really matters in this day and age. Yeah. And I think fundraising has gone so far down the low context path. And I understand that low context, highly efficient fundraising serves our purposes when it comes to oftentimes acquiring the donor. And this gets back to the very transactional nature of a lot of the fundraising that we do and the special events. That's that low context space that oftentimes lets us down. Mm-hmm. I remember I had a conversation with Stephen over at Blue Meringue, I don't know, 6 months ago, and he was telling me just like what you guys are saying, that in the midst of COVID, the donors are answering the phone.
Yeah.
And they were seeing, and this was 6 or 9 months ago, right at the beginning of all this, they were seeing sort of this uptick in organizations sort of tracking an increased number of successful phone calls. And I remember somebody responding back to that conversation, a major gift officer, I think in New York City, one of the big hospitals, and saying, I've got donors calling me back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And then I, at the same time, I was having conversations. I would be doing a coaching conversation or a seminar or something, you know, online or something. And I would be hearing from, say I'm talking to an AFP chapter, and I'd be hearing things like, I'm losing my job. And it was the people who have job descriptions that are sort of embedded in whether it's low context or high context sort of work within the frame of fundraising that I think we're sort of are starting to win out. And I think that's really where we're at now. I think in 2021, it's going to be even more so that if you're not doing high context, high touch work, your organization is going to be struggling. And oftentimes we as fundraisers are going to be struggling to make the case for our work. Am I right?
Yeah. And I would say, Jason, about that too, it goes deeper into just what do we all long for in relationships. We long for authenticity. We long for something to be real, to have purpose. And that's where we've got to move to in our strategies and in our approaches, in our asks, in our relationships with donors. That's what's going to make the difference.
Yeah. Those organizations that were doing that when COVID hit, they didn't miss a beat.
Right.
Even those, like I put in a pitch here for just planned giving programs for a second. Those organizations that did a really good job 10, 15 years ago of really helping their donors be able to give a legacy, those organizations through COVID have been doing amazing because They built from years ago relationships with donors to be able to do that kind of work. And now these organizations that didn't do those things, they were the ones that were scrambling. The ones that weren't about building relationships, weren't about helping donors build a legacy. Those organizations are the ones that are scrambling right now and are hurting. But as Richard said, those organizations, though, that really were real, authentic with donors, have built trust, they are performing incredibly well during this time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, guys, this is great. We usually lose our listeners at about 35, 40 minutes in. That's sort of where we're landing the plane right now. Mm-hmm. I got to say, this is probably a great way to wrap up 2020 with this sort of a conversation. I'm really grateful that we had some time to catch up this morning. For the sake of my listeners, I want to just remind everyone the name of Richard and Jeff's book is It's Not Just About the Donor, The Ultimate Management Guide to Major Gift Success. Guys, I'm guessing we can get this thing on Amazon and probably any number of places. Am I right?
That's right. Go to Amazon.com and plug it in.
It has certainly been a pleasure. You're both always welcome back. Thank you for being on the Fundraising Talent Podcast this morning.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.